Fun Home is a musical based on a graphic novel based on the real life of Alison Bechdel, a successful cartoonist who documented her journey coming out as a lesbian and her complicated relationship with her father in this intimate graphic memoir. The musical follows her at three stages of life: as a child, as a young adult discovering her sexuality, and as a grown woman in the process of exploring her memories in order to write the book. All throughout, she interacts with her father, a gay man who was closeted his entire life and who died before she started to write. This groundbreaking musical was adapted with book and lyrics by Lisa Gron and music by Janine Desori. My guest today is my friend Jen. I hope you enjoy our conversation about Fun Home. Hello, Jen. How are you doing?
I'm good, Quinn. How are you?
I'm great. What are we talking about today?
Today we are talking about the musical Fun Home.
What a good show. I mean, they're all good shows. I feel like the We Rate Dogs guy where I'm like, they're good shows, Brent. I don't know how obscure the reference that was, but it's all good. So what is your personal experience with Fun Home? To paint us a word picture.
So, like, my junior year, I have this friend who's, like, always listening to music. And I was like, how can you just always be listening to music? He's like, well, I just know what I like. And he asked me what kind of music I liked. And I was like, well, I guess I like Broadway music. And so I just went home and I got on YouTube and I found a Broadway mix because I did not have a smartphone at the time. And it had like 1,000 songs, and Ring of Keys, I think, was the first Fun Home song that came up. And I was like, this is such a good song. And then I just fell into the rabbit hole.
That's such an interesting way to find a musical. You were literally just like on a Broadway roulette and ended up on this one.
Yeah.
Wow. And then, so I'm assuming you've listened to it since. Have you gone to see it?
I have not, but I have watched a version of it on YouTube. So.
Mm-hmm.
So far. Yeah. Not a lot of Broadway musicals come to Southern Iowa, which is where I hail from, so I have not seen many musicals in my lifetime, but...
Mm-hmm. Fun Home actually was touring in Boston last semester, and I did not get to see it, which was very sad, because I wanted to, and then it, like, just didn't work out, so... R.I.P. No, I also have not seen it. I think this might be the first episode I recorded where no one... Neither person on the show has ever seen it. This is going to be interesting. But yes, I started this show. I don't even remember when I first listened to Fun Home. I was aware of it from the Tony performance back in 2015. And then I read the graphic novel that it was based on. And so at some point, so I like knew some of the basic songs like Ring of Keys, which they did at the Tonys. And then at some point, I just sat down and, like, finally listened to it. And then I was, like, crying and, you know, okay, now I have another one to add to my list. But I didn't really get into Fun Home until probably this past summer. So, like, the summer of 2017.
Yeah, I just recently found out that it was based on the graphic novel, which I love graphic novels, so I'm definitely going to have to read it sometime. But, yeah.
Oh my gosh, you have it! I just stood up and handed Jen a copy of Fun Home.
Okay, I'm gonna read this then.
I aim to serve.
Oh, this is good. Now we can reference this if we want throughout the show. We have an encyclopedia of Fun Home.
Yeah, we do. So yeah, so Fun Home is based on this graphic novel memoir of Alison Bechdel, who is this cartoonist, and she's very well known for being a lesbian feminist cartoonist. She did the series Dykes to Watch Out For, which is a pretty popular comic series back in the day. I don't know when it was out, but like before my time. And yeah, and so she had this graphic novel, Fun Home, which is pretty widely praised and pretty popular, and then they adapted it into a musical. And that's where we get our story. So the whole story of Alison Bechdel's life, as told by Alison Bechdel. Do you want to jump in and explain a little bit about what Fun Home actually is?
Sure. So Alison Bechdel grew up in Pennsylvania, and her dad was gay, which she did not know when she was younger, but she finds out through the show. And he obviously had, he got married anyway, and he had three kids. And Allison later in college comes out as gay, and it's a lot about her relationship with her dad and them both being gay and kind of their relationship with their sexuality.
Mm-hmm. And the whole show is set up, there's kind of three timelines happening at once. It's non-linear. And so you have Allison, like adult Allison Bechdel, who's standing at a desk telling her story, and she's going through her old photos, her old possessions, and things that she remembers from her dad in order to write the graphic novel Fun Home. And then while she's doing this sort of as the narrator and the overarching story, a child version and a college version of Allison are going through various scenes of her life. But it's not like all of the kid and then all of the college age. They do go back and forth quite a bit. And so it's a really cool way of nonlinear storytelling of like her process of what writing this book was at the same time that it's happening out in front of you on a stage.
Yeah. In the version I watched, it looked very much like it was a very small theater, and it was kind of like just a little rectangle and kind of sunken into the floor, and the audience was like on three sides and kind of more of an amphitheater style. So it's very intimate setting, and it has a very three-dimensional feel, and that they perform to like all three sides almost.
That's really cool. Yeah, it feels like a very intimate story because you're supposedly inside her head, and these are memories that she's thinking about, instead of, like, I think most of the time when you go to see theater, the imagery is like you're a fly on the wall watching an event, whereas this is you are experiencing the inner thoughts and memories of a person.
Yeah, and it's definitely like it's a very small cast. Like, there's not a bunch of like giant chorus, like kick line songs. They're all very like kind of different structured songs, and that some of them are literally just them talking for most of the time with like music in the background.
Yeah, the soundtrack to Fun Home is really interesting because it includes all of these interstitial bits of, yeah, just like talking. And so you get a lot of the story that way that's included on the soundtrack when most of the time it probably wouldn't be. And it's all very like storytelling oriented. Like you said, there's not like a dance number in Fun Home.
Yeah. Well, except the Fun Home song.
That's, yeah, a little bit there, yeah. That song is a verified bop.
I showed it, I was talking to one of my friends who I was trying to indoctrinate to Broadway, and that was the first song I showed him from Fun Home, and he's like, what is this musical? Because it was small children singing about death, and so he was a little off-put by that, but...
Yeah, it really is. They're very excited about it. The whole thing is that the title Fun Home comes from the fact that the dad ran a funeral home and the kids would refer to it as the Fun Home, which is morbid. And then, but it's also, you know, like metaphorical. It's the Fun Home, which is ironic because it like wasn't a great fun home, and all of this stuff. And there's a lot of layers. It's a very layered, symbolic name.
Yeah. When I first listened to the first song, I thought it was going to be about, like, a foster home, almost, because Ring of Keys doesn't give you a lot of context about the plot, and, like, from the colors, and, like, it looked very childish, and so I thought it was going to be about a foster home, but no, it's a funeral home.
Yeah, it's totally normal. It's so interesting that, to remember that this really is a person's life, because, like, I mean, obviously it was stylized in certain ways to become the graphic novel, and then it has to be stylized in different ways to become the Broadway show. And so I'm assuming, like, not everything is totally factual according to what happened, but the broad strokes are real events from this person's life, and they're very concerning. And, I mean, this isn't really a spoiler because it's, like, the context of the show is she is writing this book after her father has died, and she's going back and trying to remember him and sort of re-experience him as an adult. And it's been, there's an interesting criticism that's levied against a lot of everything and Broadway shows fairly, which is the barrier gaze trope, which is that like LGBTQ characters often die like constantly, which, and on, so on the one hand, like it kind of falls into the trope because like her father is dead, but on the other hand, like it's her real life, so what are you gonna do?
Yeah, she also she invented the Bechdel test, didn't she?
Yep.
Which was where trying to see, like, to pass the Bechdel test, two female characters have to be talking on screen about something other than men.
Mm-hmm.
Which, when you have that in mind and you watch a lot of movies, you're like, wow.
So many of them don't pass the Bechdel test. And this is the thing. It's not like Alison Bechdel set out and was like, this is going to be a feminist movie test. It was a joke in one of her comic strips that, like, one of the characters had this test for movies. But then people liked it so much and it became to be known as the Bechdel test. I think there are extra points if both of the female characters have names, something like that. It's really sad. You can look up websites of, like, does it pass the Bechdel test? And so many don't. Sad.
Yeah, I saw like, an interview with, like, Reese Witherspoon, who was talking about how there's this one line that's similar to the Bechdel test that, she taught her daughter to look for in movies, and it's the scene where it's usually in like an action movie where a woman turns to a guy and says, "What do we do now?" And she says that you can tell that a guy wrote the film then, because like, how often does a woman turn to the guy and say, "What do we do now?"
Man, I hadn't heard that before, but I like that. Yep. Yeah, you're right. So beyond the structure of this show, which I do think is one of, like, what makes this so good, is the way they construct this non-linear story is brilliant, and, like, you don't have any trouble following it, and it becomes so much more powerful when you see parallel events happening at different points in her life. Like, I could go on about that for a while, and I already have. But talking about just the music itself, it's a very sparse show in a lot of ways. It's a lot of solos and conversations. I don't think there are really... Are there any, like, big choral numbers at all?
Well, there's the one song called Raincoat of Love, which I'm trying to remember the context of it. But, oh, I think she's watching TV. And then it's, like, right after her parents have been fighting. And so I think it's, like, a really happy, like, peppy song that the whole family cast gets in on, and so I think that's her, like, imagining, like, watching this TV show about this happy family, and she's, like, imagining, like, oh, I wish my family were, like, this big happy family, and it's, like, it's a very upbeat song that doesn't go, like, with the rest of the theme of the other songs, but yeah, that's basically the only, like, really happy song in the whole thing.
Yeah, there are. Yeah, I guess there are a couple of songs where, like, the whole family gets in on it. There's a lot of stuff they do where there are characters singing different melody lines. So one part of the song will be, like, one character, another part of the song will be another character, and then they'll go over each other. Usually it's in an ironic way, like, there's two very different things going on, and then they get put on top of each other and forced to harmonize in this interesting way. So it plays a lot with the music representing the subtext of what's going on. But let's talk about the characters for a little bit. So obviously we have Allison as our center, but we have three Allisons, which is a fun, interesting game to play. So, well, here's a fun question. Which is your favorite Allison?
I think I really like youngest Allison. I don't know, she's very quirky, and I really like that.
Yeah, she's sweet. She's the one who sings Ring of Keys, which is her, like, big moment. She's the first time she sees a butch woman and is like, oh my god, she feels seen for the first time, and it's adorable. Yeah, I like young Allison. I just like old, cynical Allison. Old, she's like 40, but the one who's watching over the whole thing and has already gone through everything. Because I feel like the younger Allisons are very innocent, and very naive in certain ways, and so it's a big contrast with this one that jumps 20 years in the future and has just seen so much and gone through so much. And like as she's watching her like youth and innocence play out in front of her.
Yeah, it's kind of like it progresses with like how much she knows about her dad, because like when she's little, she doesn't know he's gay. She doesn't even know she's gay. And then she slowly like learns more about him. And then she has conversations with her mother about like her father's past. And so like her oldest version is kind of like thinking about her dad and kind of trying to reconcile their relationship, I feel, because they definitely didn't have, they had a very strained relationship, I feel.
Yeah, in the very first song, there's the line that's like, caption, my dad and I were nothing alike. Caption, my dad and I were everything alike. And then she really can't decide whether or not like they are exactly parallel or complete magnetic opposites.
Mm-hmm. The brothers are very minor characters, especially because they only exist in childlike form. Like when she comes back home from college, her brothers aren't there and she doesn't talk about them at all. So I think it really does emphasize that she's exploring her relationship with her father and less of like the whole family, because I just feel sorry for the mom the whole musical, because her life just seems so hard.
Her life is so sad. I never thought about how her brothers aren't in any of the college things. I guess they didn't want to cast older people, and so they were like, no, this is enough.
Yeah.
So they really serve as not like props, but I mean they're like fairly like these are the two brothers in this family dynamic, but completely not the focus of anything that's going on and become widely unimportant later. Because like she's just home from college and like doesn't need to impact her storyline. I wonder how Alison Bechdel feels about her brothers in real life.
Well, and even in the scenes where like Alison is at college and then they're showing home, they never show the brothers either. It's just the parents.
Mm-hmm. Which again, probably a casting thing. Like, why bother to cast two teenage guys for this very small part in this otherwise like very intimate musical?
I'm curious, do the brothers come up more in the book, or is it like very similar in that like they just don't care about them?
In my memory, it's very similar, but it's been a while since I've read Fun Home, so I don't recall immediately.
This looks like page 216, so fairly near the end of the book. It looks like, yeah, this looks like college age Allison, and then I'm guessing those are her brothers, but yeah, they definitely were not major characters. We haven't mentioned Joan.
Joan, Joan, Joan,
Joan, Joan. Joan.
So Joan is a very important, pivotal character in our young Allison's life. Three guesses how. There's a very excellent song called Changing My Major, and it's the Allison singing about how she is changing her major to Joan in like her first semester of college. It's a wild ride.
Yeah. So it's interesting because like when Allison is little, they show kind of the dad like discouraging like gay-ish or like gender non-normative behavior in Allison, but then like when she brings Joan home at college, they seem pretty okay with it.
Yeah, and Fun Home takes place in like, well, according to Allison Bechdel's age, it would have been like early 70s when she's a kid, late 70s in college, and then somewhere around like 2000 when she's writing it, like early 2000s. And so you gotta think like she is, comes out as gay in the late 70s, brings a woman home to her family. So I can imagine this was definitely like not super embraced immediately, probably, especially like with the context that her dad is a closeted gay man, which this would they did not know or was not public at the time. So I feel like it kind of makes sense that like maybe when she was younger they wanted this idea that like, oh, we don't want you to be anything but like quote unquote normal, But then when your kid comes home with someone, then it's like, well, at this point, you either like have to outright reject or accept, and you can't just like discourage anymore. And so I guess it forced them to make a choice.
Yeah.
Well, let's go back and talk about the mom for a minute, though, because, yeah, she definitely goes through the most in this show. I feel like she's really struggling.
Yeah. Definitely the one song that's like Days and Days. I'm not sure. That's probably the title. But she like kind of laments how she's like wasted her life being married to a guy who like doesn't actually love her, and how she like they talk about how like their house is like kept very pristine because their dad is like really anal about it. And so, but then the mother is also aware that her husband is gay and having affairs like consistently, and she just lives with it.
And not just affairs, but affairs with like teenagers.
Yeah.
Which is not good. It's real bad. And yeah, there's a long, long tunnel of denial that she has to dig through in this show, because, wow.
Yeah, and then the Days and Days song is kind of where she's, like, realizing, like, yeah, this was not great. And she, like, basically tells Allison to, like, go find a better life, basically. And then, like, after she leaves, the dad dies. It's all very sad.
It's, yeah. So a lot of tragedy here. I think the original graphic novel has the tagline, a family tragicomic, because I think that Alison Bechdel has a very morbid sense of humor in terms of all of this stuff. But
yeah, growing up in a funeral home, you know, that's not...
That'll happen to you. Get a bit macabre. But you have the dad who ends up... doesn't he go to jail? Or, like, he's arrested.
He is arrested, and then he's sentenced to therapy, I think is what they said. He had to go, like, see a psychologist for, like, a certain amount of time.
This is a bad time all around. Which, on one hand, like, you feel bad for him, because he's clearly living this trapped life. But on the other hand, he's cheating on his wife with underage boys. And you're like, well, none of that is even a little bit acceptable.
Yeah, but they talk about how, like, if he was in, I'm guessing he was in World War II, because the wife talks about how they, like, went somewhere in, like, Europe, and, like, recently after they got married, and then the dad, like, went berserk. Because the mom later found out that, like, a guy they had visited had, like, been his lover for, like, a really long time, and they had some fight. And so, like, at the beginning of the relationship, he's, like, cheating on her. But, like, the 60s were, like, the very much, like, gay, starting of, like, gay rights movement. And so, like, before that, I can imagine, like, the thought of, like, coming out as gay would be extra terrifying. So in that sense, it's a little understandable, but it makes him very miserable.
Mm-hmm. It's just really bad all around. Like, no one is having a good time. No one is having a healthy time. It's all this huge mess of, like, fear and anger and not being able to deal with things publicly or constructively. And so a lot of secrets and a lot of pretending you don't know things that you actually know. And this was the kind of thing that affected a lot of families in this time. But this one got turned into a Broadway musical, so we are talking about it.
Yeah. I also wondered, like, I know her dad was obviously dead, but I wonder, like, what her family thought when she wrote this book, because it's very much, like, tell all, reveal all. And so, like, maybe they enjoyed that, you know, like, you know, no more secrets, everybody knows. But at the same time, it's like,
very intimate.
Putting the graphic back in graphic novel. I think about this a lot when people write memoirs, especially that reveal pretty serious stuff. Like, what did the people in this think about it?
Yeah, and how that would affect further future interactions with your family.
Well, then she then wrote another graphic novel called Are You My Mother, which I think deals with her relationship with her mother, because, like, this one's focused on her dad. Mm-hmm. And so it's unclear to me, like, if she's just burning bridges or if something had happened previously, because I haven't read Are You My Mother, and so I do not know about her motherly relationship. But I'm sure that's an interesting story as well.
Yeah, well, looking, just like skimming through the book, the mother always seems to be cast as like very serious and very tired looking. And so not the most affectionate.
It had to have been hard to like, and I mean, we know we're talking about like she brings Joan home from school and everyone's like remarkably chill about it. But I'm sure it wasn't the most explicitly embracing of that, especially with the context of her dad and feeling like this was a path that was like really messed up their family in a lot of ways. And so it's probably not a particularly warm relationship, at least for a while. Now I'm speculating what people's personal lives. It's fine. But I mean, really, this whole show is about her relationship with her dad, and it's her trying to seek out a connection with her dad that she perhaps didn't really feel while he was alive, and trying to look back and be like, was there something there or not? What ways were we really like? What ways were we different? So there's that. This is the huge focus. And then there's also, of course, like this journey of her coming out and accepting herself and realizing who she is. She has this whole story about how she went to a bookstore and saw a lesbian book, and then she freaked out and she came back and she bought the book, and then she bought the rest of the books. And so she also, within this pretty tragic narrative of her and her dad, there's like also this story of like she's cool with herself and she lives as like a successful gay woman, so she's doing all right.
Yeah, one of the scenes that definitely sticks out to me is when little Allison is getting ready for a party and her dad tells her to go put on a dress, and she's like, but I don't like dresses. And he's like, well, every other girl there is going to be wearing a dress and you'll be the only one who isn't wearing a dress. And then she's like, fine, I'll wear the dress. And I was like, that's so sad. Just like forcing all this social pressure on this young little child. It's just like, you won't fit in. And then she just scares her back into conformity.
Symbolism.
And I think that kind of mirrors definitely what was going on. But that was like definitely her dad's logic, because he's like, if I go against the norm, I'll be the only one. I'll be singled out. And so he was kind of trying to teach Allison that in a way, I guess, kind of to protect her, I feel like, because he was scared of possible repercussions. And so he was trying to teach her what made sense to him, but it wasn't very healthy.
Not a lot in this show was very healthy. I want to talk about the very end of this show, because it destroys me, is the song Telephone Wires.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, my God. I literally have this song on a playlist of just, like, songs that make me sad. And it's the whole time, like, the older Alison Bechdel has kind of served as the narrator and off to the side, and then near the very end, Allison's home from college and her dad, like, she now knows her dad is gay and she's trying to reach this connection with him, and they go for a drive, and then like the older Allison actually takes the seat and is like singing just directly to him as part of the scene as they're driving, and she's trying to say to herself like, you need to talk to him, say something, please say something to me, and you just like, you're hoping so much the whole time that like they can say something that can actually bring some kind of resolution to this intensely tumultuous relationship. They don't. And it's so sad. But that ends up being the last time she ever sees her dad. And it's also the climax of the show in terms of our narrator, Bechdel, has to come to terms with there isn't anything else, and that she's reached the end of the story and telling the story, and like that is where it ends, and you don't get your happy ending culmination.
Mm-hmm. Because kind of in the beginning, when she's talking about like how her dad and her are similar, she says, "We were gay, and I grew up to be a lesbian cartoonist, and he killed himself." And so she's just kind of trying to figure out why, because like she says, you know, we were exactly alike. She sees a lot of parallels, and yet he had not a good time in life and ended up killing himself. So she is just kind of figuring out why throughout the whole thing. And I don't know that she ever really comes to a very satisfying conclusion,
but she publishes it anyway. I mean, the conclusion is more the acceptance that she's not going to find that from her dad, and that she has to find herself in herself instead of a relationship with someone else.
That's good.
Thank you. Actually, how does this show actually end? Like, what is the last scene of this show?
She goes back and she starts writing the opening scene.
Yeah. Oh, yes. The
airplane.
I want to play airplane.
Well, yeah. She says it like, "Daddy, comma, daddy, come here." And then the little Allison comes on and says, and then sings it. And they basically just like reproduce the first scene.
Except now you're crying.
Yeah.
Because that's how they get you. It's very cyclical.
Mm-hmm.
Because you could technically, I guess, just do that over and over again. And then, you know, the show would go on forever. So this was a show that came out in like 2015, like I said, and it was on the 2015 Tony Awards circuit, and it won a bunch of them, which was cool. It was nominated for 12, which is a lot, and then it won 5, including Best Musical, which is our big award, of course. So it won the big three of Best Musical, Best Book, and Best Score, but then it also won for Best Direction and Best Actor. So the Michael
Cerveris.
So the guy that played Cerveris, the dad, won for Best Actor. And it's interesting, all of the Allisons were nominated, and the mom. So Beth Malone, who played the oldest Allison, was nominated for Best Leading Actress, and the person who played the mom, and Sydney Lucas and Emily Skaggs, who played the two other Allisons, were all nominated for Best Featured Actress, but none of them won. Because the king and I took both of those awards. So, come on, Kelly O'Hara. I guess that makes sense. I just find it kind of ironic that only the guy won the Tony for this. But it happens. It just depends on who the competition is. But it is cool that they did manage to win 5. 5 Tonys is quite a few.
Yeah.
I think there's only like 13 or 14 total. And so winning 5 in a year is a pretty good sweep, especially when it includes Best Musical. So it was a pretty successful show. It is now not on Broadway anymore. It's touring currently. And so if you're not like me and miss it, then maybe you can see it in a touring production.
I feel like the one I saw like was the original cast, because the voices sounded very similar to the recordings.
Mm-hmm. The one you definitely legally saw, Jen.
Very, very legally.
I actually met Sydney Lucas one time because I went to Broadway Con last year, and you just can like enter into a signing, and I happened to get the one that she was at, and a couple of the other Fun Home Kids, I think, and so she was very nice. I was like, "You're so talented and so small." And that's where I'm at as a person. But I didn't even know Fun Home then, so I didn't really appreciate it as much as I would have now.
Yeah.
I feel like this show really hasn't traversed past the world of musical theater, though. I mean, like, you have some shows that, well, there's Hamilton. And then you have, like, other shows that, because of Hamilton, have been getting more popular with a little bit more mainstream audience, like Dear Evan Hansen, maybe. But I feel like this one is really, like, even though it's won a bunch of Tonys and all of this stuff, is not particularly known outside of people who know musical theater, which is kind of sad.
Yeah, I think that's valid. But, I don't know, it's kind of hard to compare something to, like, the popularity Hamilton accrued.
Well, yeah, I'm not trying to compare to that. I'm trying to compare it to other shows that are, like Dear Evan Hansen,
Like, Phantom of the Opera would be, like, something that you would say and people would, like, oh, yeah, I know, that's a thing.
Yeah. Or even something kind of like Newsies, which isn't that well known, but, like, it's on Netflix now and it's based on a Disney thing. And so people, like, have some recognition as to what it is. Like, I don't think anyone knows who Fun Home is. What Fun Home is, unless they know musical theater or they know the original graphic novel.
Well, I think that might also be due to the presence of new technology, because, like, back in the day, like, if there was a musical, like, you had to go to the musical to see it. Whereas, like, movies, like, it's in the theater, like, it's in every theater in every town in America. And then, like, it would go on, like, VHS back, like, way back when. Or, like, it would go on DVD or go on Redbox, which is where I get all my movies. But, like, movies are very accessible, but Broadway was very much you had to go to the show, which was shown in exclusive places for very high prices for a select amount of time. Whereas now, like, I first found Hamilton through, like, listening to my Broadway mix on YouTube. So, like, and I can listen through the whole soundtrack. Whereas, like, back in the 80s, there was no YouTube, so you couldn't listen to it.
I will tell you, though, musical theater culture in the 40s and 50s was lit. It was very mainstream popular. Like, shows like Oklahoma, like, everybody knew Oklahoma. Even though very few people could go to New York to actually see it, like, it was pretty much the same as it is now. Like, you had to have money or some kind of access to New York City to see these shows. But, I mean, they play the songs on the radio. Like, all these songs would chart because they'd get so much radio play. And that people would love the touring productions and the local productions. And I think that musical theater is definitely getting more popular now, especially with Hamilton, like, sort of leading the charge on this. But it's still not, it's very much still a sort of a separate thing than popular music. But they were a lot more mixed in the, like, 40s and 50s in that era, which is super interesting. I could probably tell you more in a couple months after I finish taking my class that's on the history of theater in the 40s and 50s. But for now, I've only been to one lecture and that's all I have.
I feel like, I guess in a way, Disney has kind of helped, I would think, in promoting Broadway-esque things, since they're generally defined as musicals and some have, like, been made into actual Broadway musicals. Like, apparently Aladdin is very popular and I've listened to some of its songs, but I don't know. I'm not a huge fan.
I've never listened to Aladdin. I mean, you know, like, The Lion King is a little bit popular. The Lion King's one of the longest running shows on Broadway. Like, is doing great. And then you have other stuff. I mean, Frozen's coming to Broadway this year.
Oh, so. Yeah, I saw that.
Yeah. I thought you meant you saw it, and I was like, no. How?
I have my connections.
No, Frozen's going to... I mean, they did have a pre-Broadway run, but I don't think it was anywhere close to here, so I was like, what? And so, yeah, Frozen's coming back, and then all this stuff. So, yeah, between the Disney movie musicals, because they also put out a musical every year, pretty much. Yeah. Just had Moana, the best movie of all time. And then, I mean, like, Pitch Perfect brought back a cappella music. Mm-hmm. Hamilton brought back musical theater. We are living. It is a time to be...
La La Land?
La La Land? Oh, yeah. La La Land is really bringing back musical theater, or at least musical movies, which is a very exciting situation for everybody involved. What a time to be alive. I do think that Fun Home does... I mean, Fun Home has, like, a very important place in musical theater history mm-hmm. because it is the first Broadway musical to star a lesbian protagonist. Which, 2015, people. 2015. But I digress.
Well, when did Rent come out? Because I guess the main characters weren't lesbian, but it was very much about that culture.
Yeah, Rent was from 1996. But what's interesting is Rent is, like... features several lesbian and gay characters, but like the people who it technically centers on are Mark and Roger, who are heterosexual. So, well, and there have been several musicals that do feature gay men as protagonists, but Fun Home is the first one, the lesbian, and I think the only. don't think we've added to that in the past 3 years. So get on that. And was so successful. Dear Evan Hansen was so successful. They wrote Dogfight, too. I don't know if you're familiar with that one. It was a few years ago. Didn't reach it quite the same level, but people liked it. And so now they can kind of just do whatever they want. Because I think The Greatest Showman was also has been doing well. And so you'll be seeing a lot of Pasek and Paul around for a while.
Something came up on Pandora recently. This musical called First Date.
Oh, yeah. Is that with Zachary Levi and Krista Rodriguez?
Maybe. It was two faces who I knew, but I'm bad at, like, knowing people's names.
Hello, I'm walking IMDb. Nice to meet you. I think we mostly have just talked about how sad Fun Home is, which is, you know, fair. Because, but it is also, like, it has a lot of really nice moments and this really beautiful journey inside of this overarching, fairly tragic story of this... father-daughter relationship that doesn't have a satisfying resolution, and now I'm sad again. Anyway, but I recommend Fun Home a lot. I think that is generally underrated as a musical, or at least doesn't get as much attention as it should.
I agree.
Like, I can't hear you nodding. Would you like to wrap this up with the lightning round?
Sure. Let me get my notes real quick. Because...
Okay. Let's be prepared.
All right. I'm prepared.
Okay. Your favorite song?
Ring of Keys.
Your favorite line?
The one from the Fun Home song where she's like, this one's called an aneurysm hook, on guard. That one always cracks me up.
That's a little concerning, but all right. Your favorite character?
Probably Al.
Okay, is that like...
Allison, yeah. The college one is...
The college one, yeah. Okay, and if you were going to play a character... Which one would you want to play?
Oh, if I could shrink myself, I think playing Little Allison would be fun, but I probably wouldn't get cast as it.
Oh, don't say that. Also, this is a fantasy lightning round, so you can play whoever you want. You can be like, I want to play the dad, and I'd be like, cool. Who would you recommend go see this show?
Probably my sister.
Oh, why?
She's very much on the front of, like... gay rights and also like gender equality and stuff. She's very active in that field, so I feel she would enjoy this.
Lovely. And if you were going to combine the show with another musical, which one would you pick?
The one that came to mind was Next to Normal, because it also is kind of darker and it also kind of has a bit of a suicide component, and I feel, and it's also just kind of about like the inner workings of a family. So I feel they're very similar, and I feel like you could make a successful mashup of them.
All right, very nice. And that's going to be all from us, so thanks for talking with me.
You're welcome, Quinn.
Goodbye.
Bye.
Thank you for listening to Corner of the Sky. You can find us on Twitter at COTS Podcast or online at theincomparable.com/COTS. If you'd like, you could also write us a review in the Apple Podcast Store or recommend us in Overcast. Until next time, keep hold of your ring of keys.